Welcome back. Let's Get Physical Therapy is an educational podcast brought to you by MedStar Health and hosted by me, physical therapist Becca Schumer. I will be sharing the mic with tons of healthcare professionals with the goal of educating and inspiring fellow PTs and future PTs. We hope you find this both informative and inspirational, ultimately optimizing how we treat our patients and grow as professionals. Please enjoy today's episode. We're continuing our ACL series, and today we're lucky to have Dr. Rich Levine, who's doing the Bear procedure. Have you heard of that one? Well, stay tuned. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Dr. Levine. He graduated from Cornell University, where he played Division I soccer and lacrosse. He completed his medical school training at the State University of New York Downstate College of Medicine and completed his residency in orthopedic surgery at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School. He then moved to Baltimore, where he completed his fellowship training in sports medicine and arthroscopic surgery at MedStar Union Memorial Hospital. Dr. Levine has served as a National Football League team physician for the Baltimore Ravens since 2004. Baltimore Blast fans will also recognize Dr. Levine from the sidelines of the professional men's indoor soccer team, where he has served as a head team physician for the Baltimore Blast since 2001. Dr. Levine also serves as the head orthopedic surgeon for Towson University, Goucher College, and Notre Dame of Maryland University, where he provides care to student athletes and is a fixture on the sidelines and in the stands during games. Dr. Levine employs both operative and non-operative treatments to assist in patients' goals of returning to pain-free activity. He specializes in arthroscopic surgery and treatment of injuries to the shoulder and knee, specifically ACLs, meniscus, cartilage care, rotator cuff, labrum, knee ligaments, and shoulder instability. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Levine. We're stoked to have you this morning. How's it going?
Good. Thanks, Rebecca.
Absolutely. Usually what we start with is your journey. How did you become an orthopedic surgeon? What got you into it?
I started knowing I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. I wanted to be a physician. So I went to college. I actually studied business management and finance just because I felt I'm going to go to medical school and I'll learn it there. So I had a little bit of a roundabout education experience, but I went directly into medical school straight out of college. And when I was in college, I played sports, and sports seems to be a natural fit for me and my life and my interests. I would say if you look at all people in medical school, it's almost like there's a personality that matches what you go into. You can almost see on day one where everybody is going to end up. And I think for me, sports medicine, orthopedics just matches my personality and my interests. So that's the direction I took.
I was a dual sport athlete in college, and you were as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it was different times. I played soccer and lacrosse. And I could tell you, having covered a lot of these events now, I don't think I would have even made the team back if I were applying right now. But yeah, back then I was somehow able to do two sports and get through college. So it worked out well for me.
It definitely did. All right, we're going to switch topics now to all things Bear. Yep. So we know that Bear is the bridge enhanced ACL restoration. It used to be called repair, and now I'm seeing more restoration. Is that right?
Yeah. So originally it was called bridge enhanced ACL repair. And the manufacturers and the people that did the original work really felt that it was not an accurate description of what's going on, because there's a difference between a repair and the Bear procedure. So when we talk about repair, we actually take sutures, we put it into the torn ACL, we sew it back to the bone. So repairs are really only good for those people that tear their ACL directly off of the bone, whereas this procedure relies on the ACL to regrow. So it can happen from anywhere. It can happen mid-substance, it can happen closer to the tibia, the bottom, and it regrows the way an MCL regrows. So they've changed the word from repair to restoration.
Tell me about it. Who's a good patient for this procedure?
Yeah. So the key here is that, first of all, we started doing ACL reconstructions 20, 30 years ago, because the original ACL repairs had a poor outcome. And technology was different back then. We used to take people and put them into casts. And this, again, before my time, sew the ACL. And they became stiff and it didn't work out well. So then the ACL reconstruction came along, which is really still the gold standard for somebody that tears their ACL. But the problem is this. We're okay at reconstructions, getting people back to sports and relatively high-level activities, but 50% of patients after an ACL reconstruction are going to end up with an arthritic knee. And this is happening in our very young athletes. So if somebody is 16 years old, they get an ACL reconstruction and they end up with arthritis in their 30s and 40s, it's no good. So we're starting to do all this research now to say, well, although ACL reconstruction is good in the short term, is it really good in terms of restoring the normal health of a knee? And the answer is not really. So we revisited the ACL repair, which unfortunately can only be done in those people that have a tear directly off the bone. And that's not the majority of people with ACL tears. The average ACL tear is mid-substance. So the concept here is to allow the ACL to heal itself and regrow and hopefully restore the normal mechanics in a knee and then give people a more long-term healthy knee, a little different than our just get them back to sports within the next 9 months and have them play and not worry about the future.
Unfortunately, this is audio only, but can you describe what this procedure looks like and how it's done?
Yeah. So the way it works is when you tear your ACL, this is a ligament that's inside of the joint itself. And inside the joint, we have fluid called synovial fluid, which for the most part does not offer blood supply and allow anything to heal. So typically, you tear something inside the joint, it never heals. Now, the MCL, medial collateral ligament, on the outside, or the inside part of the knee, but closer to the skin, we know can heal. People tear their MCL all the time. We put them into braces, and then 6 weeks later, they're looking pretty stable. But why? And the reason is because it's a great environment for things to heal, and the body knows how to do that. It almost knows how to regrow the MCL. So the concept here is we're taking a scaffold and putting it inside the knee. We're taking what's left of the ACL and sewing it into that scaffold. And that scaffold blocks out that synovial fluid. So it's creating a new environment inside the knee that's almost reproducing what the body has outside of the knee to allow things to regrow and heal. So the procedure itself, there is not a true repair, but we're taking some sutures, putting it into the stump of the ACL, whatever's left, and we're directing it into this scaffold and then placing a stitch across the joint to temporarily hold the knee in the right position while the new ACL regrows.
And you're injecting that, the bear, I don't know what you call it, the marshmallow.
Right, so it's, yeah, the marshmallow. So it's the bear implant, and it almost looks like a styrofoam cylinder when we get it out of the package. But then we take the patient's own blood during the surgery, we draw it from their arm, and we put it into this implant, and it starts to become soft. It almost looks like a marshmallow. I make a small incision adjacent to the patellar tendon, and I can tightrope that implant that's now almost squishy directly into the joint and into the previous sutures that I passed, holding the bones in place and holding the ACL remnant into the implant. So it's arthroscopic for the most part, but there is a small incision, maybe 2 or 3 centimeters, to actually get this implant in there. It's not really injected. It's more placed in and slid along some sutures that we've previously placed arthroscopic.
I guess the benefit of this is that you're not harvesting a graft from the patient. So
yeah, I mean, that's one of the advantages, is that there's no morbidity or taking a graft from somewhere. Currently we use patellar tendon, quad tendon, hamstrings. So yeah, we don't have to do that. So that's a nice part of the procedure. But again, the main focus is really, what is this knee going to look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Are we going to get a normal looking, feeling knee without arthritis? And if you look at some of the early animal studies that are done on this implant, it's pretty incredible. You see pictures of an arthritic knee after a reconstruction. You see an arthritic knee after leaving the knee unstable, and then you see the knee after the bear, and the articular surfaces look almost normal. So
how many weeks does it take for that bear implant to reabsorb?
Yeah, the implant itself disappears in a matter of weeks. I forget what the actual number is. It might be 12 weeks or so, maybe even less. So the implant does absorb and disappear, but the idea is we're trying to just create that environment early on to allow the new ACL to regrow.
How many weeks, months does it take until you're actually seeing a continuous ACL graft? And are you getting MRIs on these people to follow up to check on that?
Yeah, so we are getting MRI. So I'm involved in a study. It's a multi-center study throughout the United States. And at MedStar, we are the first people that were involved in this study, and we're the major center for the Mid-Atlantic region. In the study protocol, we are MRIing all of our patients at 9 months, both the injured repaired knee and the contralateral knee. So far, I've probably seen about 8 or 9 of my own patients that have reached 9 months. And for the most part, there is an ACL that is regrowing in that area. The signal intensity on these MRIs is not quite normal by any means at that point, but we're also going to re-MRI, I believe, at the 2-year mark.
As far as protocols post-op, how does that affect how we treat the patients afterwards?
The protocol is somewhat slower at first because since this is a repair, we don't want to stress it out. We're going non-weight bearing with crutches for the first 4 weeks. My experience having done a bunch of these is that I think the protocol and the rehab is much slower at first, but then you catch up. Either way, we're intending to return most of these athletes back at 9 months to full contact sports, which has really become the average for even our reconstruction. So big picture, probably the same amount of time. Realistically, I think it's a little slower at first, but then they catch up.
Is there any research out there yet regarding contralateral tears or ipsilateral tears when the patient returns to sport?
Yeah, so the original studies were taking a look to see, hey, you know, how does this thing hold up? And the original studies showed that the re-injury rate for the bear patients were equal to the re-injury rates for the reconstructions. Now, this was done out of Boston Children's, and it was a very young population, which happens to be our highest risk patients for re-injury. And in that population, they showed no difference in terms of the re-injury rates. But I'll tell you, it's a study. This is a new technology. And the answer is, I'm not sure how this is going to pan out, and it's going to probably take us a few years of getting these out there to really see what is the re-injury rate, what is the contralateral injury rate, and how well do they do long-term. One of the advantages of doing this is, let's say this pans out and the re-injury rate is equal. Well, if you do re-tear your bear, you can still have a primary reconstruction because we have no bone tunnels in the way. So it's a much easier surgery to get done as opposed to a revision ACL reconstruction where you have tunnels to deal with. And we know there that our results.
Before we chatted, I was looking up a study from the Orthopedic Journal of Sports Medicine from 2019. And they did I think it was the first human study they did they followed patients for 2 years so far. It's kind of interesting to see that their numbers are pretty similar and comparable, except for hamstring strength. It seemed like the bear group, their hamstrings were a little stronger, but with the hop test, quad test, like Biodex testing, they were all pretty similar. And each group, it wasn't a huge group on either side, but each group had one meniscus tear. So,
yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. It was not that large of a group. I think there were 100 people in that study. So, you know, what I'm telling patients is this is a very, it's exciting, it's promising technology, but it is still early on. So if you're looking for gold standard, you know what you're going to get, you know what your injury rates are, you know what your expected outcome is, you know, reconstruction is still a great choice. Again, we're not really trying to improve on our early results or our return to sport results. The goal of this surgery is thinking long term, you know, the long term health of the knee, and that's the key. So if it is true that the re-injury rates end up being about the same, and again, I think we need to have more data to really know this, then I think it would be great if we can show that this stops or prevents or minimizes arthritis later on. I think that's huge and may even be something to consider, even if the re-injury rates end up being high.
I know the size of the implant, it's standard, correct? So does that affect someone's extension if they have, say, a smaller knee and it's more of a bigger block?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely a good comment. That's something that's being looked at for the study at this point. It's a one-size implant. It does become marshmallow-like, so it's not going to block your extension by any means. It just squishes out of the way. But absolutely, there is always concern of where does all of this stuff go when you bring the knee into full extension? Does it absorb? Does it bother people? Does it irritate their knee? You know, thus far, no. But I do think that that's certainly something to look at moving forward.
Anything we missed that you want to cover on this procedure?
No, I think it's, this is just really exciting stuff. It's new technology. It's a complete different different option. And, you know, it just shows that the way we've been looking at things, we just have to have a different perspective. You know, it's no longer about, hey, am I going to get back and play sports in 6 months? And what's my season looking like? It's what is the long-term goal here? What is the long-term health of the knee? Can we get you a normal knee that is not going to have the long-term consequences of having that ACL tear? And it's just, it's super important, and it's exciting stuff.
When we have younger athletes, it's really hard to get an athlete who wants to get back to sport to think about long-term effects of a surgery. When you're in the clinic with them, how are you having these conversations to hopefully maybe get them to see the bigger picture?
Yeah, you know, I mean, at this point, I by no means am I telling my patients, oh, you need to get the bear because it's better than the reconstruction. We're just not there yet. I think in the future, that might be the conversation where we say, hey, this is a better choice for you. Right now, not so much. And I think that the majority of people that are choosing bear are coming to me saying, hey, I know about this technology. I want to have this procedure performed. When I'm talking to my young athletes, and I have had some young people get the bear, a lot of times it's really a discussion with the parents. And the kids sometimes weigh in. Sometimes they really just defer to their parents and trust them and say, you know, mom and dad, pick what's best for me. I think we're just too early on in this whole process to really have those answers. And I think that if you're questioning it, you're not sure, a standard reconstruction is still probably the best choice.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this bonus episode on ACLs with us for our first series for our podcast. I always appreciate you and your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Becca, for having me.
We're asking all of our guests, what is your favorite quote? What's a quote that drives you, motivates you, moves you? It doesn't necessarily have to be about orthopedics, but give us your best quote.
Best quote. It's a tough one, but I'm going to say, you know, life is short. You need to love what you do and enjoy it. Okay. You'll blink and it goes by. So, you know, if you're not enjoying and having fun with the things that you're doing, then it may not be right for you. So, you know, get involved with things that you enjoy, you have a passion for, and I think that everything is going to be in a better place.
Where can people find you?
The easiest way to reach me is through my office. My office number is 410-821-8896. And we have a call center, which works well for new patients and people trying to schedule routine visits. But when you really want to have detailed questions about something like this, if you have an ACL tear, you want to make sure you get in shortly, or if you want to have a consultation about this, it's always best to press option 4, which will get you right to my secretarial staff, and then make sure that we can get back to you in a timely fashion.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Levine. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Let's Get Physical Therapy podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at MedStarHealthPT. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review so we can reach more listeners just like you. As always, we appreciate your time and hope you join us for our next episode.